Hi, it's Karen Webster for Payments.com, and I'm here today with Philippe Benitez, VP of Marketing for Gemalto North America. Philippe, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure.
Okay, so here we are, the first day of the liability shift here in the U.S. as we've now moved officially to a chip card environment. We have a lot to talk about, but let's start with the basics. Here we are, first day. Who's ready and who still needs to get ready?
Oh, you're right. Today is the day, and many, many thousands of issuers and financial institutions are ready. From the largest ones, you know, the top issuers have been working on migrating their cardholders for the last 18 months. For example, I've been getting my cards from various of the top issuers. I'm a member of Amex. I got that card about 18 months ago. I have a Citi card. I got that card about a year ago. And I'm a member of a 50,000 person credit union, and I got that card within the last couple of months. So issuers, large and small, have been working hard to get their cards migrated to EMV over the last year. And this is the first wave of issuers that started early in the process. And MasterCard announced last year in a press release that by the end of this year, we would be seeing more than 575 million EMV cards in circulation. And I would say that we will easily see that number of cards in circulation this year. So a lot more issuers have migrated than we could have expected.
Interesting. So that number is a big number, but that suggests, given the number of cards in circulation here in the U.S. in the billions, we still have work to do. So I want to talk about the liability shift implications, but in a bit of a different perspective. So we all talk about liability shift from the perspective of who actually is responsible in the event of a fraudulent activity at the point of sale. But what about from the consumer's perspective? You know, they've been hearing that this is coming and that chip cards are safer. Are those who haven't migrated yet likely to face a liability shift of a different sort in not being top of wallet for that consumer?
Well, for sure, nothing changes for the consumer, right? The consumer is never liable for fraud at the point of sale. So what the liability shift really entails is, before EMV, banks were liable for fraud occurring at the point of sale. Starting today, which is the liability shift date, liability will be shifting to the participant in the payment chain with the lowest level of security. So that means the participant in the chain who has not yet migrated to EMV. So if it's an issuer who has not migrated to EMV and fraud occurs at the point of sale at a merchant that is already EMV ready, then the liability will be with the issuer. However, if it's an EMV card being used at a non-EMV terminal, for example, then liability will fall on the merchant who is not yet EMV ready. But from a consumer's perspective, nothing will change. The consumer will never be liable for fraud.
I think that's true. Obviously, consumers, I think, have been well trained to understand that. But they've also been reading in the newspapers, and they've been getting material from their issuer about this shift, and it's in their best interest, and it is for security. But consumers have multiple cards. Let's say they have three or four cards, and let's say two of them have a chip and two of them don't. Will the two without the chip face the liability shift from the perspective of the consumer, and I'm using that in air quotes, for perhaps not being, in the consumer's mind, as safe as the cards with the chip?
Yes, that may very well happen, because in the consumer's mind, the chip will represent a higher level of security, and they may very well choose to prefer a chip card over the MagStripe cards that haven't yet migrated. So for sure, issuers may see a drop in preference or finding themselves at the bottom of the wallet if they have not yet migrated to EMV because of this consumer education.
They certainly wouldn't want that. But let's stick with the consumer for a minute. And, you know, we're all creatures of habit, and the habit in the U.S. for a very, very long time has been swipe. It's a prehistoric MagStripe card, but it works, it's easy, it's quick, everyone knows how to do it. And that is going to be very different starting today. And I've already observed consumers standing in line, not really sure. It takes a little longer. What are you anticipating in terms of the consumer behavior and their experience at the point of sale as this gets to be something a little bit more familiar to them?
Well, for sure, we're going to see forgotten cards at the point of sale because, as you say, dipping is slower than swiping, for sure. And the fact that consumers will no longer be able to pre-swipe their cards like they used to do in a MagSwipe world, right? Because the card now needs to be dipped in the terminal and left there for the duration of the transaction. So that slows the transaction down compared to swiping, for sure, because of the habit that they've had of keeping the card in their hand, swiping, and putting it right back in their wallet, and changing this to leaving the card in the terminal. Many consumers will forget their cards in the beginning, which will lead to a certain level of inconvenience. And so that's where consumer education becomes paramount. And I've noticed that merchants are already helping consumers at the point of sale figure out how this new process is going to work. But beyond the pre-swipe, you know, in fact, that they have to dip rather than swipe, I think what this will introduce is the deployment of contactless as a new payment mechanism, right? Tapping and paying, because contactless is as fast as swiping.
Well, so you're saying that the experience is going to be, consumers will experience, at least from their perspective, a degradation in the point of sale experience. Therefore, they will welcome an alternative that is quick, and therefore the solution is contactless, except that now there are all these chip cards in the market that aren't contactless. So how do those two things reconcile themselves?
So what we've seen in other parts of the world is the first wave of migration from mag to chip is done in contact with contact chip cards. So those cards are deployed to consumers in mass, just like what is happening here in the US. And then as the ecosystem completes the upgrade to EMV, the next wave of issuance is in contactless, because merchants and issuers have measurable benefits from migrating to contactless in terms of increased spend, because consumers tend to use contactless cards for more of their everyday purchases simply because it's faster than reaching for their wallet and paying in cash for small purchases, or using contact chip card instead of the contactless card that they have obtained. So what we've seen everywhere else in the world is in the second wave of issuance, FIs moving consumers to contactless cards after they deployed chip.
So where does mobile fit in that flow?
So mobile is a form of contactless EMV, and I like to call it mobile EMV because the underlying payment mechanisms in mobile and in cards is all EMV. Mobile is just a different form factor for contactless EMV, and where it fits is exactly what we're seeing here in the United States, which is it is being deployed in parallel with cards. The U.S. is very much in advance of other geographies in terms of deploying mobile payments, with the Apple Pays and the Samsung Pays and, you know, all of the various mobile implementations of EMV. So consumers will begin to see other consumers, right, or experience it themselves at the point of sale where merchants have enabled contactless, that this contactless experience is quicker and easier than the other available options in their wallet.
So what do you then see over the next year in terms of the landscape with respect to issuers' decisions about this move to EMV and their decision about cards, how they're allocating their spend to support this migration? What are you hearing from your customers?
That they're interested in, for certain kinds of portfolios, considering contactless technology as the next phase after deploying chip. And of course, they're all very busy deploying their mobile strategy, right, with the various mobile EMV options enabled in modern handsets.
I was reading an article over the weekend in the Financial Times about a columnist who was describing her experience using a contactless card, and she was making the comparison to cash because, of course, where she's using her contactless card instead of cash are places like coffee shops and convenience stores, and she remarked that at the end of the month, she now understands how much more she is spending. So obviously, you know, cash, you can see how much you have. When you're putting something on a card, you don't always, you lose track.
Exactly right.
So what are some of the other things that you think we should be paying attention to as we now think about the next year, as this process begins and we move through this process of a chip-enabled card market here in the U.S.?
One thing we're going to hear a lot more about is tokenization, both in terms of merchant tokenization to protect cards at rest, right? Cards on file, especially for online and e-commerce, and tokenized payments, especially as it relates to mobile and in-app payments. And all of this is still layered on top of EMV, but we're going to hear more about it because as EMV is deployed or gets deployed in the physical space at the point of sale, fraud will naturally migrate online, where it is still easier for fraudsters to breach data and obtain large numbers of cards. And so what we're going to see is investments also by the merchants in terms of merchant tokenization to protect these cards on file and the data at rest, and investments from FIs to enable tokenized payments in various form factors, including possibly on cards themselves.
Interesting. How would that work?
Well, it would work in the same way as it works today on a mobile device. The PAN number in the card would be replaced by a token value that would be domain controlled for only a specific kind of transaction occurring at the point of sale, for example. So in case of compromise or data breach, that token value would be unusable for any other purpose, including unusable online, right? So it would prevent these PAN numbers from being used for purposes other than face-to-face point-of-sale transactions.
That's very interesting. I hadn't thought about an application of tokenization on a card in quite that way. And the reason that that would work is because if you were entering your card number online, either in a mobile device or on a desktop, it just simply wouldn't accommodate that transaction. Is that what you're saying? The chip just wouldn't give the authorization?
That's right. That PAN number used in such a manner, so through an online capture of the PAN number that was compromised, the authorization system would decline the transaction because the PAN number is not authorized for online use. It is only authorized for point-of-sale use in the case of the card tokenization use case. And so consumers would potentially obtain a token for online use, if that's what they needed, or the token in their mobile device, the payment token in their mobile device, could be used for in-app payments and e-commerce, because that token would be enabled for those use cases.
Well, there's a lot to learn and understand about the application of EMV and tokenization. I hadn't thought about that, but that's an interesting use case to explore. Well, the next year is certainly going to be one that will also be very interesting as we all get used to life at the point of sale in a chip-enabled world and see how merchants, issuers, and consumers all adapt. Philippe, it was very nice to talk to you today and to get your perspective. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Karen.